cancer and treating cancer is $1 billion a day business worldwide. And they just pump you full of poisons and keep you, you know, Manson, when's the last time you said you heard somebody's going to do chemotherapy? And they're like, you know what? We're going to give you chemo and then you're going to live for the rest of your life.
Very rarely.
They're like, you know, we're going to give you chemo and you might got 4 years. They always put that disclaimer on. I'm sorry. Go ahead.
Yeah, and then they go, by the way, the side effects are you're going to go deaf. You're probably going to have kidney failure. You're going to lose all your hair forever. Yeah. But we'll be able to give you another 18 months.
Yeah, this is really going to get you just incensed. Man, go to Netflix, or better yet, Spice got something he's working on as well. It's called Brzezinski the Movie. And hey, you know what? I'm going to be honest with you. This guy has not paid me a dollar, not paid Spice a dollar. This is not a...
This is like a passion project for me.
Yeah, this isn't... this is a subject that Spice stumbled upon, then turned Manson onto it. They turned me onto it. Very rarely, I can probably count on one hand that my producers have come to me and made me watch something, because they know that that just doesn't work. But when they do, Spice, I hope that you're happy that I sat down and did it. I mean,
I am, yeah.
But you know, but when you do that, you're like, listen, you've got. I'm like a little kindergartner too. Spice put it right on my little car keys, like almost pinning a note to my shirt. Spice,
I had to,
and I'm really glad I did. Very rarely has Spice, you know, said, you've got to watch this. And I did last night. It's called Brzezinski the Movie. And if you can go to Netflix this weekend, or you can get a hold of this thing, it is just, well, you know what? If you're medicate yourself or get drunk or high and try to calm yourself down, because you want to smash the TV. You want to be like Elvis when his favorite, I think when the Cowboys got beat and he shot the TV out. You will want to shoot the TV out. You just use what they're doing to this guy, and this is just, you know, one doctor in cancer. How many other people, how many other Brzezinskis out there, whether it be medical, whether it be maybe somebody who's got some type of technology that we can get off big oil?
Oh, who killed the electric car?
I mean, how many other Brzezinskis, if you want to just title it Brzezinskis, that have some just unbelievable technology that could, you know, free us from something that the government has done the very same thing to? Please. Jenny, hello.
Hey, Bubba. Hey, was just wondering, is this doctor still practicing?
Yeah, he is. Matter of fact, yeah, I think you can go to just type it, Google Dr. Brzezinski. It's Brzezinski. My good friend Richard Fabrizi's father is going through, you know, chemo and cancer right now, and I have half a mind to try to beg Mr. Fabrizi to fly to Houston and get checked out.
Right, right. I've got my daughter's fiance has a family member that has just been diagnosed with brainstem cancer. He's a young guy.
And you know, Jenny, when you watch this movie, they have their act together, and I'll have the director on today at 8:10, Eric, but they go on and they give you case by case of people that have, you know, inoperable brain cancer, and you know, they start out, they give the MRI, and they have like a 20 centimeter mass, and they do two or three chemotherapy sessions, and they're getting ready to, you know, be ultimate sick, and they get on the Brzezinski program, and it goes from 20 centimeters down to 10, down to 5, down to nothing, and then they go 2 years with each month being checked, and they're still cancer free.
Really?
I mean, it's okay. You know, as Manson, didn't he say he had a 30 to 40% cure rate?
Yeah, I believe it was 30%.
Yeah, well, I'm definitely going to call his family and tell them. I know they're not listeners of you, but I will definitely call them and tell them that they need to.
If my child or Manson, your daughter or something like that had cancer, I could care less what it costs. I'm flying to Houston.
Oh, absolutely.
Tomorrow.
Well, Blue Cross Blue Shield's not going to pay for that.
Please.
They're in bed with Pig Farm, too.
God. My listeners, man, I very rarely beg of you. I beg of you to watch this thing. I beg of you. Manson, it gift wraps. It absolutely, this movie gift wraps everything that's wrong with our country and why we are here and how we've let special interest kill our country.
It really does.
It gift wraps everything. Special interest has killed our country in every facet of it. Financial, oil, medical. Insurance, it's killed it. We're done. And there's not a politician that has the balls, because they will never have a political career from that point forward that will do anything about it. And you can first start and stop by getting rid of lobbyists. That's the root of all evil, period. Term limits and the elimination of lobbyists. And Manson, that would be a start.
So this big, like, the cancer thing for the cure, it's all a scam.
Yeah. Because mm-hmm.
nobody's looking for the cure.
Susan G. Komen doesn't have a curing division within it. I'm just telling you that right now.
Yeah, no, nobody realized the race for the cure is being run on a treadmill. I mean, that's the facts.
Yep. No, you're right.
Those
are
the facts. And every single one of you chicks that are out there walking, stop. You're not helping anything.
Yeah,
quit.
No. You know what? You'd be better served, like Manson's wife does. You'd be better served to go find a woman that's going through breast cancer and help her out with some of her, you know, whatever she may have, bills or with her kids or something like that. That helps breast cancers, cancer more than the race for the cure, because nobody's trying to get a cure.
The fact of the matter is, it's a race against the cure. If they find a cure, everybody's out of business.
Speaking of which, I got the producer of the movie Brzezinski. The movie, it's called Brzezinski. The movie, and if you we've been talking about it all morning long, and you've got to find this. Go to YouTube.com and just type in Brzezinski. The movie, or it's on Netflix. And Spice is working on having a public showing of this as well. And Spice begged me 2 days ago, yesterday actually, take this home and watch it. So him and I sat down last night and watched it together. Eric, how are you, my friend?
Good. How are you?
Good. I watched your movie last night. One of my producers, Spice, gave it to me. Very rarely does he say, because he knows I have, you know, all types of ailments where I can't sit down very long. And he actually kind of mandated, he goes, you've got to watch this. And wow, I am so glad that I did. I'm really glad to meet you, my friend.
Thanks. Nice to meet you as well.
And listen, man, I don't even know where to start other than after I watched it, you know, and obviously I'm speaking in parody, but after I watched it, it wanted me to, one, help you and get the word out as to what our government is all about and what they're doing to this guy. And two, I wanted to go up. I don't know if this David Kessler guy is still in charge. I wanted to just go kick his ass, to be honest with you. Sure, I wanted to go beat his ass.
Yeah, yeah.
Is he still the head of the FDA?
No, No, he's not been the head of the FDA for quite some time.
There's some other criminal in charge.
Yeah.
Right.
Now, Eric, is it continuing on? I mean, obviously everything we watched on TV last night was circa, you know, mid-90s. And what's the latest, what's the latest update with regards to, is Brzezinski still getting screwed with?
Sure. Essentially, you know, as you saw in the film, the FDA never wanted him to have official FDA clinical trials where the FDA would be giving permission to allow the normal process of testing a new medicine to get to market. And their indictment backfired on them, and they had to open up the clinical trials under the idea that let's at least give these patients the medicine up until we throw them in prison, and then we'll pull the plug on everybody. And but, of course, he won the trial. Two trials, you know, he won. So that sort of surprised them. So off the clinical trials were off and running. In 2009... Those were called phase two clinical trials. In 2009, those phase two clinical trials were completed, and he's been given permission for phase three. What the FDA has now done is that they've made the phase three clinical trial protocols so difficult and so daunting that basically every single hospital in the United States refuses to allow them to be conducted on their property. So now he has to go outside of the United States or create a new sort of new lobbying campaign, which I'm trying to help him with, to try to get the FDA to basically to rattle them and just say, look, this is completely irresponsible and illogical that what you're asking people to do for these phase three trials. Why don't you just treat it like anybody else and be reasonable, especially considering he's curing the first phase three trial he wants to do is for a childhood brainstem glioma, which only about 300 kids a year are diagnosed with, but antineoplastons are the first recorded medicines in the history of medicine to have ever cured it, with a 27.5% to 50% cure rate, depending on the age group.
All right, so there's so many things to talk about. One, if we rewind kind of where we start, and then two, obviously we've kind of fast-forwarded to where we are now. Mm-hmm. But, I mean, is there ever, and if we were to keep the fast-forward deal prior to rewinding, is there ever an opportunity, do you think that there's ever any something that would happen, whether it be somebody that was a mover and shaker, whether it be a president, whether it be something that can take the black cloud or off this guy and endorse this guy and embrace this guy for, you know, a possible, you know, miracle worker that he is and embrace this guy for what he really is instead of making this guy public enemy number one? Is there any light at the end of the tunnel?
I personally feel like there is. I don't think I'd be spending as much time with it if I didn't believe that. I think the first thing with any sort of big movement like this, I see it as a civil rights issue like anything else in our history. I think the first step is to get massive awareness. We need as many people, many human beings, to know about it, be aware of it as possible. And once that once we reach that point, we can really start making a move. Little things that we're doing is that we, you know, the White House opened up, you know, a petition, for instance. Now, this is not something to put a lot of stake in, but, you know, we have a petition to help try to get attention paid to this. And every new there's a lot of cancer drugs on the market today, especially gene-targeted drugs like this one, that are approved already only after completing phase two, without having to go into the phase three, under what's called accelerated approval, based on the idea that, for public health needs, this drug needs to be on the market.
But most of the accelerated approval has all gone through Big Pharm / FDA, and now we're back to the root of the problem.
Correct. That's precisely right.
I mean, the problem is we have a guy from Poland, Dr. Brzezinski, who is a, you know, kind of a maverick, a lone wolf, if you would, and he's not succumbed to Big Pharm, and Big Pharm is mad at him, and he really, really, you know, is a thorn in their side, because there is no money in a cure. There is money in treatment, and he, you know, is really not into the treatment at all. He's into the cure, and that is a pain in their ass. And so since they don't, that's why he's going through the phase three clinicals, because he's not Big Pharm.
That's correct. In fact, no one in this industry has ever seen anyone like Brzezinski pull this off. As you know, he has patents on it. As you know, he's in clinical trials. No individual scientist has ever even made it this far. It's completely unheard of to have done this, because he should be, first of all, in prison. Many people before him that we've never heard about, you know, are all still sitting behind bars for trying to do what he has done. So, and if he does get this approved, which everyone is very hopeful that it will eventually happen, he'll be the first guy in history to have ever done this, where an individual with his own company has bypassed, you know, all the hurdles and gone through the system. And so, I mean, think about it. One guy has the ability with his company to basically create a stranglehold on what we know today.
The guy can become the richest man in the world for all I care, and I'm happy for him, and that's the root of some of the problem. Eric Marola on the phone today. He's the director of the doc called Brzezinski, the movie. Now, you can go to my website at btls.com. The first rotator is the petition to the White House. The second one is how you can see this movie, and you got to watch it. Eric's the director of the movie. It's been out about a year, but you know, you spoke about it in its absolutely most, you know, elementary and fundamental type way. I don't understand. Again, you know, this great country that we call ours, and that we're free, and that we can do this and that. You know, you got a guy that comes, you know, from Poland. He's got a great idea. It's not illegal. It's not illegal to dabble in, you know, gene research and the anti-neoplasms, you know, stuff that he's doing. If you're doing cocaine and heroin and stuff like that, that's, you know, not legal, and you're doing it, you know, via homeopathic type deals to make it a medicine, I get it. But this guy is not even doing anything illegal, and isn't it? It's his fundamental right to try to cure people legally, and isn't the person that's sick's fundamental right to seek treatment? I mean, isn't that in the simplest form what we're kind of talking about here?
And as perverted as this may sound, first of all, yes, you are legally allowed to do what he's doing, but in many situations, you are not legally allowed to seek the cancer treatment of your choice. You have more freedom to go home and refuse all treatment than you do to choose this guy's treatment within this system. It's fascinating. That's another sort of fascinating aspect of it all. Especially now, if you're a child, just like the Canary that you, family that you just heard, the mother, you know, they were faced with social services taking the child away, while they waited for the paperwork to be approved by the FDA to get Dustin in that clinical trial. So, yeah, no, I mean, you don't have that freedom. It's sort of a fascinating side of our so-called freedom. When it comes to medicine, it's very much a dictatorship. When it comes to cancer specifically, we very much live in a dictatorial environment. You know, if you don't want a chemo, radiation, or surgery, you know, how dare you go another route, and we will do whatever we can to prevent you from doing so. Fascinating.
You know, and what I found fascinating as well, and you know, this is kind of a simple fact. I think it was the people from maybe Missouri or maybe Iowa or Missouri, and it was the couple sitting there at the kitchen table, and the one guy said, "Hey, listen, before I start pumping all this chemotherapy through my kid, I went and kind of did some research within that world, and one of them is basically DDT, and it's been around since 1972, and the newest form of chemotherapy is 1982. So we're basically, there's no technology involved in that. We're just, you know, basically going in there and killing and suppressing, you know, whatever cancer is, only to give somebody a little bit more of a shelf life of life. And, you know, chemotherapy and radiation, the technology has not changed since the mid-'80s. And he's like, God, I want something that's a little bit more advanced and a little bit more effort. And in its simplest form as far as that, I mean, chemotherapy is not revelation. There's nothing new on that at all.
Absolutely right. It is fascinating. I mean, you have, we're fighting the disease of cancer with technology that came out 20, 30 plus years ago. You know, imagine if we put the same kind of restrictions to the, like the computer industry where we'd be. It's very interesting that we have seen no progress in that department. I mean, there's a lot of people making progress, but the allowance to allow that progress to be pushed through is greatly hindered, within the system we have right now for cancer, development and, approval.
Eric Marola on the phone. Spice, you and Manson chime in as much as you want because you guys watched it as well, and I'm sure you have a bunch of questions.
I'm sorry. Go ahead, Manson.
Look, the most telling thing to me in this movie was when they actually did, you know, some trials, the FDA at the Mayo Clinic,
right,
that the government actually watered down by incredible fractions the drugs that they gave to cancer people to disprove this therapy, you know, which is basically murder, in my opinion. So that, to me, that proved, I mean, the government went after this guy in the 70s. They went after him in the 80s. They went after him in the 90s. They went after him in the 2000s. So that's, you're talking Republican administrations, Democrat administrations. So it proves that it doesn't matter, you know, whether you're Republican or Democrat. They're all serving the corporate interest.
Yeah.
That's right. I mean, they're all, regardless of what the surface level of the left or right paradigm may appear to be different, but they're all there to protect the very same establishment. It doesn't matter what little nuances they have on the left or right. I couldn't agree more. But you know, the more you dive into it, and like when I spend time with that guy, Dr. Lucian Shen, this is standard operating procedure. When you have a new competing cancer treatment like this, this is what you do. You don't allow it to get you pushed through.
We're talking about trillions of dollars, right, Eric? Trillions.
That's exactly right.
Trillions.
Yeah.
And you know, when you're talking about trillions of dollars, shady stuff happens, and that's where we are today, right, bud?
That's right. I mean, it's not just what you saw in the film, and we see it happening every day. You know, with all sorts of facets of our various parts of business. When you have someone wanting to protect their establishment, they will go, you know, to whatever end they need to do so.
Believe me, we know that right now. We have radio personalities that are just doing all kinds of crazy stuff. But I mean, Eric, you touched on it just briefly. I know there are so many things that you had to touch on, but you know, you said the cancer industry just isn't, you know, radiation and chemotherapy, but it's also then all the doctors and clinics and endocrinologists and all these professionals that have, you know, invested hundreds of thousands of dollars in their education and in their facilities that are affected by if something, and I don't want to say as simple as, you know, a cure and Brzezinski's stuff, but I mean, if somebody like Brzezinski was able to wrap up a technique or, you know, using his androneoplasms deal, it would certainly jeopardize their business. So now you got Big Pharm, now you got all these professionals, you know, tens of thousands, if not hundreds of thousands, and maybe millions of professionals that thrive on cancer treatment, not cure. So it's more than just Big Pharm. You know, it's the millions of people that are employed by Big Pharm and then are also, you know, doctors and things like that.
You're exactly right. And, you know, it's beyond just the monetary competition, too. It's sort of these very, very entrenched belief systems. As we know, if you ever know a doctor or anybody in a scientific profession, these are all very proud, dedicated people to what they have learned and what has sort of been, what has been instilled in them. And they have a very much of a crowd mentality. And so if you try to tell an oncologist that you try to convince them that Brzezinski, what he's doing is legitimate, even if he believes it, it's going to be very difficult for him to say that in front of his peers. You know what I mean? Just for a almost old school, high school peer pressure sort of environment. That's what I've noticed as well when trying to talk to oncologists about this. I mean, they will privately tell you this is amazing when you interview them privately about one of their patients that were supposed to go to hospice only to be cured by Brzezinski. But they will never admit in a public forum that, you know, what he's doing.
Well, you know, Eric, one of the things I found most interesting was just the fact that, you know, to discredit him, one of the things that they've done is, you know, sort of nicknamed him the urine doc, which is, you know, one of those things where it's a laughable term and it makes him seem like a joke, even though, you know, what he's doing is obviously quite serious. So, like, my question to you is, how does it work? You know, it's the film Brzezinski movie got into it, but not in great detail. How does it actually work? Like, what is he using?
Sure. I'll give you the quick 101. Essentially, back in the late 60s, that long ago, while he was getting his PhD in biochemistry, after he got his medical degree, he discovered a strain of peptides in the human blood that had never been recorded before. He had absolutely no idea what these peptides meant, but he and his colleagues were excited about it. It made some local news, or actually some national news at the time in Poland, and he kept exploring it. So as he kept exploring it, he was testing these peptide levels in different sexes, different ages of people, you name it. Then discovered that the these people that had cancer, depending, especially people with late-stage cancer, they had a very low count of these peptides or were almost absolutely absent of them. And peptides are these little small proteins in our system. And he also found that, not only were the blood level peptides, the levels of the peptides in the blood, they were identical in the urine, those two major forms of plasma or liquid in our system. So as time went on, he just sort of hypothesized, wow, if there's a way I can extract these peptides from donors, from human donors, and then try to somehow deliver them to people that had cancer, really having no idea at the time what the mechanism would be. Just it's totally shot in the
dark.
You
mean extract healthy peptides from non-cancer people?
Precisely.
Okay.
Sorry. Yes,
okay.
Precisely. And then he said maybe that'll be helpful. So the amount of blood needed to collect, to get the amount of peptides needed to try to do this was very difficult to acquire. So what was the second best thing? Urine. So he went so far as to setting up vat urine collectors in state parks around Texas, prisons, bars, like anywhere he can get large amounts of urine. And he would truck it in like with gasoline-sized trucks that you see on the highway into his manufacturing plant and start extracting them. So that's when everybody said, oh, my God, he's just giving people urine to cure cancer, which that's not at all the case.
But you can see where, you know, Big Farm, you know, that thinks that this guy might be on to little something-something can certainly have the ammunition to make this guy look like a quack.
Absolutely. But then what they don't pay attention to and what no one seems to notice is that since the early 1980s, he stopped using any urine or blood, and he learned how to synthesize the chemicals that allow your liver to reproduce these peptides again on their own.
Oh, so he doesn't need the natural base of urine or blood. He's been able to synthesize it and make it.
Yeah, since the early 80s. I mean, he only did it from the urine / blood extraction for about 5 or 6 years.
Okay.
But it never went away. Like on the local news in Houston, they used to start off the news report with a big flushing of a toilet, you know. The urine doctor's at it again.
Right.
So, yeah, it's been a running thing. And even, you know, the mainstream reviews of my film, some of them just didn't pay enough attention. And, you know, in 2010, we're writing, you know, urine doctor. And it's fascinating how sort of the propaganda just seeps right through.
So continuing on the treatment, Eric, then he's been able to synthesize these peptides not through urine collection or blood collection. Now he's been able to make them, you know, in a lab. Mm-hmm. And then does he infuse those the cancer-free peptides into people that have cancer?
Okay, yes, but instead of the cancer-free peptides, it's now, again, these synthesized chemicals that he's now has patents on. What also makes it difficult for the mainstream oncology world, if you will, to grasp it, and also makes it difficult for the phase 3 trials to be accepted in the United States. It's basically a 24-hour infusion. You carry this pump around with you that runs on batteries, and there's an IV bag that has to be changed every 4 hours. You're not running around with the IV pole. It's like all contained in this nice little neat bag.
Right.
And every 4 hours, it takes 4 hours for your body to flush it through your system. And you have to change the bags every 4 hours, 24 hours a day.
Like almost like a colostomy thing that you wear on the side of your hip or something.
Precisely,
okay.
Yes. Except there's a port that's surgically installed in your chest, much like most people receive chemotherapy, so it's not an unusual process. As far as that goes. But that's the only thing. Instead of you going to the chemotherapist and sitting in a lazy boy chair for 3 hours, or whatever that may be, that's basically what you have to go through. First of all, so you're on the infusion 24 hours a day. You have to learn how to do it. You have to learn how to change the batteries. You have to learn how to check the pump if something malfunctions. You have to learn how to change the bags. And it's good to have a family member or a very dear friend or a husband or a wife to be with you to learn how to do it. And then you also have to have a local practitioner, because most people that get the treatment do not live in Houston, Texas.
Right.
But you have to go to Houston to get started, and you usually have to stay there for 2 or 3 weeks. So you have to have a local doctor, say you live in Knoxville, Tennessee, that agrees to oversee you. So every week, every couple of weeks, you have to go in to see your local doctor to make sure that the catheter in your chest is not getting infected, your blood work looks okay, all the basic sort of things that, you know, of monitoring a patient in a situation like this.
So the peptides and you know, his concoction, so to speak, is in that bag, and then it infuses it, you know, it kind of slowly gets it into you, right?
Mm-hmm. That's correct.
And
yeah.
And you, now how do you continue to stay on this thing, and you continue to get your levels, and then at the end of the day, I mean, you know, after however many if it's working, can you eventually get off of that?
Absolutely. Most of the time, within the first 6 weeks, you're going to know if it's going to work. Within the first 6 weeks, you'll have no response or have a stabilization or see a tremendous reduction of the tumor. It seems to be like the 6 weeks is like almost like the magic number for like it takes the time it takes to really see a difference if it's going to work for that patient. As everyone should know, it's not a magic bullet. It's just a whole lot better than anything else modern oncology has ever produced with no side effects. Anyway, but to go back to what you were saying, you know, some patients have been known to be on it for 6-8 months, which is a long time. But, you know, you get used to it like anything else. But then once you get through it, and once you ideally, hopefully, have a complete response where you don't need to be on the infusion anymore, he'll keep you on a pill form of the same substance.
Oh, cool.
As a maintenance for about a year just to keep an eye on you and keep an eye on it.
You know,
Go ahead,
you know, one of the things I'm curious about is, you know, he was having success with, you know, brain cancer, which obviously is like the toughest of the tough. Mm-hmm. But what is the success rate on some of the, I guess, lesser cancers, so to speak?
Lung cancer, things like that.
Sure. Basically, it's hard to answer that question because, basically in the 1990s when he was given the commission to do phase two clinical trials, he had to sort of lump every cancer patient imaginable with every type of cancer into one big sort of like series of clinical trials. So he had like 72 protocols he had to do. As time went on, and also you got to remember too that any pharmaceutical company, including himself, which is technically considered one, has to pay for your own clinical trials. Mm-hmm. You can't charge the patient. It's sort of the law, how the law works. And since the government refuses to give him a dime to help him, or no other entity will help him, he has to pay for them on his own. So the reason you see so much brain cancer is because since he has to put his own money towards paying for these trials, he might as well focus on the most incurable types out there. And brain cancer is one of the big ones because you get brain cancer, you can't remove half your brain and expect to live, unlike a lung or a liver or something like that.
So is it almost one of those things where, you know, he looks at it as, hey, look, if I can, you know, basically have really a great success rate with brain cancer, lung cancer
which is the toughest.
That's precisely right. That's exactly his logic. He's like, why not go for the absolute, just crazy cancers that just no one has ever been lived through and prove to the world that this thing works. That's precisely his strategy.
So imagine how many hundreds of thousands of lives could have been saved all this time if they would have allowed his treatment to be, you know, expanded to regular cancer.
Absolutely.
Disgusting.
Brett Hatley, over to you. I'm sorry.
And to dovetail on that question, I'm curious as to when they hauled him into court, what did they charge him with criminally? What was the actual charge?
Yeah, let's start getting into that a little bit, Eric. And that is, we've been all the road. Now let's get into the legal problems. And that is, you know, once in the way I watched your movie last night, the Brzezinski, the movie. By the way, you can go to our website, btls.com. Eric Merola is on the phone. He's the director. And you can find out how to see this and also sign the petition to the White House. So once he started getting some traction on this technique that he has developed and got kind of on the radar, so to speak, of the FDA, that's when the FDA comes rolling in. And at what year, Eric, did he get his first indictment?
The very first indictment was in 1995. And I'd like to tell you sort of the rundown as quickly as I can and as comprehensively as I can. Essentially, in the 70s, he fled Poland to get away from communist tyranny, essentially. They kept drafting him back in the military because he refused to join the Communist Party. And they kept redrafting him back and forth to keep him from researching his invention. This is what they did back then. He found himself in the military with all these other college professors and other scientists that refused to join the party. He flees the United States, gets a job in Texas at Baylor College of Medicine, a very prestigious medical school, teaching medicine and studying his peptides. The National Cancer Institute was giving him money, about $5,000 or $6,000 a month, to study these particular peptides that are what we now know as antineoplastons. Around 1977, or late 70s, they wanted to bring him into the fold. They said, let's bring it in. We'll bring it into pharma. We'll partner with Baylor and the NCI to see this thing through. This is awesome. However, in the paperwork, they would not let Brzezinski have any control over it whatsoever anymore. And maybe because of his past and history in Poland and having a distrust of government, who knows? But he said, no, I'm not losing control of my invention. Forget it. And so he passed. So then he found out, going into the legal part now, he found a loophole. He hired a legal team, found a loophole in the Texas law. Texas being such, you know, sort of the renegade state, at least at the time, it stated that any individual scientist or doctor is allowed to invent his own medicine and give it to his own patients in his own clinic, especially in situations where there is no other available option out there for that patient, as long as that medicine did not cross state lines. As long as it was within the state, it would not become interstate commerce and break federal law. So he took that legal letter and he showed it to the state government, the state medical board, as well as the federal government, the FDA, and both of them signed off on it. And so off he went. And as they started curing people, then all hell broke loose.
That's when he started curing people of cancer. And we're talking about the mid-70s here, right?
That's correct. The mid to late 70s. Actually, now, 1977 was when he opened his first clinic.
Okay.
So yeah. And I mean, you asked about federal, so I'll go after that. Essentially, around 1985, they had the first big FDA raid, you know, freaking guns come flying in, glass breaking, you know, scaring the hell out of the patients, arresting everybody.
Took like 200,000 medical records.
Yeah, absolutely. They took all of his medical records. They took everything. They cleaned out the office.
under the guise of what? Though? I mean, like, they okay, we're coming to raid you, and you're the bad guy because of film.
It was just like, we have the power to take everything away from you, and we're going to review it all and get back to you, open up a grand jury and try to indict you, and this is all the evidence we need. But of course, the grand jury failed, and he was found innocent in that grand jury. There was no reason to go to trial. And then from that, a total of four grand juries before the fifth one. So he had five grand juries total through between 1985 up until 1995, over 10 years there.
I think in your movie, Eric, you actually said at this point the legal what it had cost the taxpayers is $60 million, and it cost Mr. Brzezinski at that point $2.2 million.
That's correct.
And each time he was 100%. You know, he was never indicted because they couldn't find anything.
That's correct. That's correct. I mean, and that $60 million was only for the federal trial for the fifth grand jury. That doesn't count all the past grand juries that they wasted their time and money on.
Now, you know, obviously, you know, we haven't said it, but let's just go ahead and say it. So at this point, you know, this guy's been indicted five times, and I mean, you know, the 800-pound elephant in the room is the reason why the FDA has indicted this guy and trying to screw with him is that Big Pharm is not happy with a little lowly ass. And I don't mean that disrespectful, but in their world, a little lowly ass, you know, Houston based. Polish guy that, you know, has success on curing cancer, and they didn't think of it, they didn't invent it, they didn't patent it, they're not standing any to make any money, and it really, at the end of the day, is competition for their treatment, and so they're probably leaning on FDA, and that's where the heat comes.
Absolutely. And to answer your question quickly about the legal thing, most of it was about the interstate commerce. They wanted to bust him for the medicine crossing state lines to the absurd extent where a patient comes from, say, Los Angeles to get treatment, and they leave with the medicine in their system. That's the kind of reasoning that you had to deal. He was up against.
Like that in itself. I don't care if you're crossing state lines or he's shipping it. I mean, he's shipping stuff that's not illegal. I mean, this synthetic peptide that he makes is not. It's not heroin. It's not cocaine. It's not poppy. It's a synthetically based, you know, derivative of urine and blood. What's the big deal?
Absolutely. And to make matters worse, the FDA. Forced, by the way, I met the prosecutor. He wouldn't go on camera, the original prosecutor from the case. The FDA forced the prosecutor to not allow whether or not the treatment was effective in the courtroom. It was not allowed to be whispered whether or not the treatment worked. It was all about what laws he may or may not have broken. That's what they would not allow. As soon as a witness hit the stand and said, well, he cured my cancer, they would go strike it from the record. The jury didn't hear that. You know, it was absolutely beyond reasoning.
Yeah, the whole thing is preposterous. And, you know, Eric, since we started talking about it, I've already got emails and people asking me, going, hey, you know, I've got a family member who's affected by cancer or just got diagnosed or whatever the case may be. And they're going, how do I... him? What's the protocol? Do you do?
How do you start? I mean, Eric, if you want to get help or information with Dr. Brzezinski, like, again, sure. Spice, I got three people on the phone lines now that all, like, they're very similar to what you said. What, you know, Eric, how do you start the process? What do you do? What's an average person that's listening to this program do right now?
If you go to BrzezinskiClinic.com, there's the info line number you can call. They're open right now. You can talk to them. I want to give a quick, I don't want everyone's expectations up. So listen, this is very important for people that have cancer right now. If you have cancer that is not a brain tumor, with the exception of adrenal cancer, which is a really rare cancer of your adrenal gland, you can't get the antineoplastons legally. The FDA won't let you have it because Brzezinski can't afford to pay for it.
It's not that Brzezinski doesn't want to help you. It's that he just right now has...
He's not having... There's no funding.
The government ain't having it.
Right. That doesn't mean you can't be treated, like if you have lung or liver or something like that now. This is really quickly, I'll try to make it as simple as I can. As Brzezinski finally understood the mechanism of antineoplastons, what the actual mechanism was when the human genome was mapped. And he was able to realize, wow, it's a gene-targeted therapy. He was able to go in. Antineoplastons is nothing more than a really massive turbocharged gene-targeted drug, no different than Avastin or Herceptin or any of those drugs that we hear about nowadays. Except unlike Avastin or Herceptin, they only target 1 to 3 genes if they're lucky. Antineoplastons targets 94 identifiable genes. So it opens up the floodgates for like so much more coverage to go after cancer. So if you have lung cancer or liver cancer or something like that that does not fall within what he can offer you within a clinical trial today, what he does is he gets your blood work tested, and where someone like a lab like Quest Laboratories, but he has it internal now, and he does a map of your entire human genome of your blood. And then
wow.
he gets, ideally, your biopsy sample. Either you have it frozen or you need to get a new one. He sends that off to a lab in Arizona called Caris Life Laboratories that does a full human genomic test of all 24,000 genes on your biopsy sample, your actual physical sample. And this is, by the way, this is the same lab that the National Cancer Institute uses as they've been harping about this new so-called personalized gene-targeted cancer therapy method that Brzezinski's been doing for 10 years now.
That they ripped off and patented him after, you know, they made this, they've spent 25 years making this guy be a dick. And
right.
basically the National Cancer Society has gone through the United States government and made 11 patents that are all very similar to what Brzezinski does.
Yeah, that's a little, again, that's going back to the antineoplastons, but I know it's very confusing. but anyway, if you're a patient that has liver and lung listening or whatever, one of those other non-brain cancers, or you know someone that does, that the blood work I talked about and the pathology work I talked about, once from those results, he will take those results and choose from the 40 or so existing FDA-approved gene-targeted therapies that are on the market. There's 40 of them now, so like all the Avastins and the Herceptins and the things like that. And there's also a form of antineoplastons that's based on the same family of his patented invention. That's sort of a very arbitrary, generic thing that's out there. It's a weaker form of his AS2-1, one of the two medicines that he patented.
So, I mean, if somebody's got something other than brain cancer, mm-hmm. is there anything that Dr. Brzezinski can offer and help?
Yes. And what he does is he does the blood test and the pathology test, and from that, from what those tests bring back as far as which genes in your body need to be activated or deactivated. I know this is a lot of information, but based on that test and based on what genes need to be activated and deactivated, he chooses from all the existing legal FDA-approved gene-targeted therapies on the market and creates very special, well-thought-out cocktails to help fight your cancer. And every month or two, he wants those gene tests to be redone, at least within the blood, and he has to alter that cocktail. So, for instance, one colon cancer patient that I interviewed, I'm making a second film, by the way, that explains all of this as well.
Right.
One colon cancer patient I interviewed wasn't even terminal. He had stage one colon cancer, had not spread yet. He went to MD Anderson. They said it's going to be surgery. We'll take out part of your colon, little follow-up chemo and radiation. And he said, and this guy was just had balls of steel, essentially. He said, no, I don't want surgery. I'm not going to lay in bed for 2 months recovering from that. I'm going to go see this guy, Brzezinski. And it's funny. He goes, well, you know, if the FDA has tried to take this guy out for the last 30 years and failed, you know, this guy, Brzezinski, clearly has something. I'm going over there.
Yeah, he must be good.
he must be a stud. I need to talk to this guy.
So this guy, based on what I said earlier, the blood work and the pathology work, there was four drugs Brzezinski gave him. One's called Zolota, another one was Avastin, and the third one I can't remember off the top of my head, and then the fourth one was something called phenylbutyrate. And so there's four drugs. Phenylbutyrate is in the antineoplastons family, but it's not nearly as powerful on its own as antineoplastons are, but it works very well in conjunction with other gene-targeted therapies that are on the market. So he'll use all of these, what's called off-label, what they're not approved for. So Avastin's approved for certain cancers, but not colon cancer. Xolota was approved for, like, T-cell lymphoma, not colon cancer. So he has been able to just be more creative with what available technologies are there, which also completely pisses off everybody else for doing this.
Well, you know, the thing about it is that I don't think that we can even, you know, the movie just really, really lays all this thing out. We've been all over the road today. But, I mean, what I just can't understand is why we're not wrapping our arms around this guy and embracing him and making him the richest man in the world. Instead, we're making him public enemy number one, including to the point where he has the technology to help other people outside of brain cancer. He does with his, you know, antineoplastins. But the bottom line is, because it's so expensive and because the government won't help him with clinical testing or even just give him, you know, full-blown approval for all this thing, that now he's only limited to really being able to help people with brain cancer. But meanwhile, he can help people with any, I mean, the way that I see it, and he can help anybody with any cancer if he would be just get some government subsidies.
Absolutely. And not only that, you know, going back to antineoplastons being a gene-targeted therapy, imagine if he had at his disposal legally to do the genomic testing that I described, because as with any of the science, things advance. You get better at things. You hone in the craft of it. So now that he has this genomic technology at his fingertips where he can look and see what genes in your system need to be turned on or off, like a computer switchboard to control your cancer and teach cancer to behave like a normal cell and die like it's supposed to, as opposed to becoming this rogue cell that multiplies endlessly until it kills its host. Now, if he was allowed to include antineoplastons in the mix with all the other gene-targeted therapies, you're talking about the future of the cure for cancer, essentially, because every month there's a new gene-targeted drug out. And as we have 200 or 300 of them, gene-targeted drugs, in addition to antineoplastons, there theoretically could be no cancer that couldn't be cured once we reach that point.
Now, let me ask you a question, Eric. Do you think there's ever a chance, let's say that Pfizer or, one of the big ones, one of the big, the root of these problems at the end of the day, you could get a CEO or you could get, somebody that can make a decision that says, screw this. This is ridiculous.
Well, this will make everybody even more upset. It's not like the big companies don't know. It's not like they're not aware. The CEO of Pfizer in 2009, December 2009, right after Brzezinski got the green light from the FDA to start phase three trials. You can get a drug approved after completing phase three, no problem. The CEO of Pfizer said, we heard you got approval for phase three. We want to be the first guys in line to distribute it for you. Brzezinski said, that's wonderful.
Great.
That's very exciting. I'm bringing them brought into the fold, but I need the $300 million to pay for this darn thing. And they said, whoa, we're not going to, they didn't say this exactly word for word, but they said, they essentially said, we're not going to risk our $300 million knowing your past with the FDA when we know darn well that even if all the money is spent and all the trials cure everybody, there's still a chance the FDA will never approve it just because the frickin' relationship they've always had.
Yeah, but I mean, you could almost guarantee they were going to approve it if you had a guy that was part of the system, i.e. Pfizer. I mean, the FDA is going to basically approve what Pfizer and the other ones tell them to, and if they were in bed, I mean, if I was the head of Pfizer, I'd be like, you know what, tell Barinsky, we'll give him 50 cents of every, I mean, he's
yeah, you're risking $300 million of the company money. And
but that's
what,
a drop in the bucket to
these
people.
But what if it doesn't get approved? Now, that guy's ass is
And there's a good chance it won't get approved because even if Pfizer's behind it, you're going to screw all these other cancer drugs, all these other hospitals, all these oncologists, everybody.
So you're in a catch bag there, right, Manson? I mean, you're
it's
boss.
And it's so despicable because it's a non-toxic drug treating cancer, so there's nothing to lose.
Genes.
There's nothing to lose.
You know what else? This shatters the belief that there is a true free market capitalist system.
Yes, it does.
It's a load of crap.
Yeah, the government plays favorites is what they do.
They will never allow something this intrusive to destroy what they have. They will all band together to replace. Now, if Pfizer does have the courage to try to take it on, and just like you said, there are enough lobbyists for everybody else down in Congress that will not let this happen.
It's despicable.
And as we know, it's not the people that run the government. It's all the lobbyists, and that's all another story.
Go ahead, Spice. I'm sorry. We've got like three more minutes.
Yeah, I was going to say, Eric, I told you yesterday how I found your movie, and that was basically when Steve Jobs passed away. I started reading up on, the pancreatic cancer, and one thing led me to another. And it's funny to think about a guy like Steve Jobs would really still be alive today if even Steve Jobs took some of his money and said, hey, man, I believe in you. Let's do this thing.
Absolutely. Now, there are so many situations like that if we had time to talk about them. Like Ted Kennedy, he died of a glioblastoma brain tumor.
I'm all right with that.
We had clinical trials. He had clinical trials with that open. Every single glioblastoma person that Brzezinski cured bombarded Kennedy's office with letters and phone calls. Even people that were not cured by glioblastoma but with other types of cancers bombarded Kennedy's office with phone calls and emails. And finally, where Kennedy's wife wrote Brzezinski's clinic saying, please call off your dogs. Leave us alone. We have the best guys in the country on this. It just goes on and on and on.
If I hadn't been so drunk, I would have paid attention to those letters.
And real quick, another great person in this whole thing is, believe it or not, Suzanne Summers, who I have a few of her books, and she is smart and on point, and she's been defending this guy for years, and she is she's got really great books out there, and she's a really big fan of Brzezinski.
Absolutely, yeah, it was great. She was the first sort of big person in the spotlight to really step up and defend Brzezinski and kind of put it.
Now, let me ask you a question, Eric, before I let you go. If it can cure cancer, through genes and the anti-neoplasms technology and things like that, could it go in? Could you take it a step further and like maybe AIDS and stuff like that? Are we getting ahead of ourselves
No.
Is that the premise of everything?
In fact, it is the premise of everything. In fact, he was treating AIDS patients quite successfully, but didn't have the resources to continue it. AIDS, Parkinson's, Alzheimer's, all of this will eventually, the cure will be within the gene therapy, where it's like, again, it's like a computerized switchboard where you're able to go in and reprogram these genes.
And everything starts, everything starts and stops with genes. I mean, it's like almost reverse technology where now we are, with cancer, we go in there and we shock your blood. You know, we go in there and chemotherapy and radiation, and we're shocking your blood. But the blood got the disorder through your genes and through, you know, how you're made and your DNA. So if you can go in and alter that and fix it from the inside out, that would be truly how you fix stuff.
Yeah, here's the easiest example to help everybody understand it. Like the drug Propecia, okay? It helps your hair grow. This is a gene-targeted therapy because all Propecia does is turn on that one gene, boom, that is silenced over time that makes your hair fall out for certain men. Same with your hair going gray, that's genes shutting down. When you get wrinkles in your face, those are genes shutting down. And the same when you get cancer. There's certain genes in your system that allows this rogue cell to develop and grow and multiply. And if you can get to the source of that gene or those series of genes that made it happen and turn them back, which is all gene-targeted therapy is, then that's the answer for pretty much almost every disease.
I'll even dummy it down for the boys that are listening to my show right now. Let's say that you got a motor that's not doing so swell. Well, you know, the actual problem is that you got like a rod bearing that's going awry. Well, you don't change the oil and think that the rod bearing that's failed now is going to get better. It's just going to be maybe changing the oil, making the lubrication a little bit better may prolong the life of the motor. But if you actually go in and change the rod bearing, then you're going to fix the problem. I know that's real dumb, but I mean, you know, in mechanical type terms, that's the problem. When you do chemotherapy and radiation, aren't you just basically changing your oil, but you're not getting to the root of the problem?
Absolutely. Then you add to that that our own National Institutes of Health admits in their own paperwork that the chemotherapy and radiation are carcinogenic and may promote recurrences.
If I can have five more minutes with you, Eric.
Sure.
And I want to get into this if I could, please. And this is what's going to so here I am watching your movie last night. I'm already pissed off at the world. I want to go fight that Kessler guy. This is everything that I thought our country was not. We're not even free. We can't even seek our own health. We can't. It's crazy. So then what pisses me off even more, make me want to kick the dog, but I didn't, obviously. And that is that fact that, okay, so they've ran this guy through the gamut. They've indicted this guy 6-7 times. They've not got anything to stick. This guy's a survivor. He's a stud. He's got great stuff. God bless him. And so then the National Cancer Society or the United States government recently goes and tries to mirror or mimic the antineoplasms type technology, and they go out and get 11 patents quickly approved that somewhat mirrors Dr. Brinsky's theory. True or false?
Absolutely. True. Yeah, and that's another part of the story that it blew me away as a journalist researching this with him. I almost didn't put it in because I didn't believe it. I thought it was just too crazy, and I spent weeks with him just trying to get all the paperwork together to prove it all, and it's right there in the patents, frankly. But one of his own scientists, a contract scientist that he hired to study one of his medicines independently in the area of Georgetown at the time, she got published. She was on the cover of Oncology News. Because it wasn't Brzezinski's name. As you can imagine, Brzezinski's name was very tarnished because of all the controversy.
Right.
So why not get other independent scientists to study it? So he would hire people that were interested, let them do it. She toured the world, gave lectures in congresses, cancer congresses, things like that, and was constantly being attacked left and right. Well, Elan Pharmaceutical, as you can imagine, all Brzezinski needed is a pharmaceutical company on his side to keep him out of prison and to keep him out of this trouble. If he could just get a pharmaceutical company on his side, everything would be great. So Elan Pharmaceutical, the CEO's sister-in-law, is cured of brain cancer by Brzezinski. So his ears perk up. He contacts Brzezinski. There's this whole long thing. Deal memos were exchanged, royalties, etc. A deal was underway with Elan and Brzezinski. They're out of Ireland, Elan is. They were. So what happens? Elan recruits this scientist that worked for Brzezinski, and then also partners with the National Cancer Institute to run off and start doing clinical trials of one of these little substances that Brzezinski had in his medicine that he never patented because he was advised you couldn't patent it. It's too much of a common substance. So they ran with it for 4.5 years and failed miserably, and Brzezinski won.
Because it's only one of several things. And individually it means nothing.
Precisely. So essentially where the patents, what comes down to the patents is this. Brzezinski never patented this one substance called phenylacetate, but for this one type of his medicine, it involves what's called phenylacetate and phenylacetylglutamine. It's sort of irrelevant, the names, but those are the two substances in one of his medicine's patents. But one of them is patented, but one is not, but they're both in the patent. So what Elon and the NCI, our own government, by the way, the Human Health and Human Services, with Elon and this scientist that used to work for Brzezinski, they got together and they decided to patent them both. And they managed to pull it off. They managed to get not only the mysterious sort of arbitrary substance patented along with Brzezinski's other one that he had patented, they got them both as a patent. Now, most people think, well, that means he can't use his medicine. What happens? Like, yes, and by the way, sorry, 11 patents, one after another, and they kept speeding up the patents, and they all stopped right before the big trial, which is another fascinating bit of timing. And it all involved, you know, the same people that were indicting him. So the same institution that was indicting Brzezinski was also going behind his back, filing 11 duplicate patents of his work, using his own scientists and using a pharmaceutical company.
And basically try to screw him by taking this one little, you know, one little facet of medicine that doesn't work individually and saying, okay, that's the little wiggle room that he left us, so now let's get that, but that individually won't work if you don't have the other stuff. And so, it really doesn't matter. But it just shows you the screw you type attitude that the federal government has, because this guy's a threat to the cancer, the trillion-dollar cancer industry. Eric Marola's on the phone. We're going to let him go. But, Eric, I'd love... we have some big stuff planning down here. In the next few days, we're going to be getting a hold of you, and we might be doing something huge with you. But consider us friend, my friend, and we're certainly on your script. And, updates as you get them, and we're here for you, my friend.
Thank you so much. I'd like to tell everybody how to see the film, if that's okay.
Yeah, please. Yeah. Please do.
Yeah. It's available on Netflix. And by the way, the title is hard to spell. It's Brzezinski, Brzezinski. The website is BrzezinskiMovie.com. You can see it on Netflix. You can see it on iTunes. Pretty much all the usual distribution routes. You can pretty much check it out. And if you search hard enough, you can find it online for free if you don't have any of them, frankly. I want everybody just to have a chance to see it.
And you can also go to we put it on our main website at BTLS.com. We put a link on, one, the petition, and then, two, how people can get it.
Okay, perfect.
But we're working on a free public showing here and bringing you into town. So
I think that
would be huge, because we really believe in this thing, and it's completely what's wrong with our country, and it's quite sad. And this guy's being railroaded. He should be heralded a hero, and instead we're trying to make him a dick because he upsets the big core big farm deal. And Eric, man, we'll certainly be in touch very, very soon, and I can't thank you enough for dedicating your life into opening our eyes up with this movie. It's called Brzezinski, the movie. And Eric, please reach out to us if we can do anything for you, kiddo.
I will do that. I really appreciate it. I've had a really good time talking to you guys.
And Spice, thank you for making this introduction and finding all this stuff.
It's been a pleasure, man. I just hope we help some people out there.
I'm buying this movie for every family member and every friend I have for Christmas.
I'm buying it as a stocking stuffer as well, and I'm gonna make my family watch it before I give them their regular gifts.
Nice.
Yeah.
Hey, thanks, Eric.
Thank you very much.
We'll be in touch, my friend.
Sounds good.
Thank you, sir.